I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm not the type of doctor that usually gets emergency calls from patients, so I was definitely confused when my latest contacted me in the middle of the night and begged to see me right away. He seemed sincere enough that I told him I'd meet him at my office. That groggy, half-awake choice is the only reason my family is still alive. While I was putting on my clothes and trudging out to the car, I tried to remember everything I could about Anton. When he first came to us, he'd been deaf for about 8 years due to an auto accident, so he was perfect for the trials. Of the 20 patients who'd undergone ear nerve regeneration therapy, he'd been the first to be in hearing again. He'd been so happy the last few weeks. I had no idea what could have gone wrong. I was so preoccupied that I didn't even notice the streetlights were out. When I arrived at my office, he was already standing at the far corner of the parking lot, nervously scanning the area. Cast in white by my headlights, he frantically waved his arms horizontally to get me to turn my car off, and then wordlessly insisted I hurry and unlock the front door of the building. I was concerned, but had never known him to be violent or on drugs, so I got out my keys, held myself a bit guarded away from him, and opened the door. He slipped past me on the left as I entered, nearly knocking me aside before he took up position behind the floor-to-ceiling glass wall and continued peering out into the night. His behavior more than warranted comment. "Anton, are you in danger? We should call the police." He began to exclaim, "No," but cut himself off harshly after the initial "nah" sound and went bug-eyed. After another hurried scan out the window, he turned to me and whispered, "No police. They can't help." Attempting to control his anxiety and help him focus, I held out an arm and led him into my office. Sitting down in a familiar setting by yellow lamplight appeared to help him, but he shook his head when I went to turn on the bright white overheads. Acquiescing, I sat behind my desk and let him explain himself. "Doctor," he said with emphasis, as if my title was the whole reason he was coming to me. "I've been hearing things." Despite my best efforts, I let slip a micro-expression of confusion. Anton widened his eyes and hurriedly elaborated. I know it's the whole point of the treatment, and I've been very happy with my progress so far. You guys have been great. The whole team. It's just, there's something more going on. Last week I began to hear this absurd, crazy choir of whistling. Like constant wind chimes during the day." That was not a good sign. A flaw in the nerve regeneration process could create problems for our funding, and for the other patients. Perhaps some form of tinnitus.
No, he continued. "They were real sounds. It was super annoying, and I spent all Saturday afternoon tracking it down until I finally found it. A bunch of people were blowing whistles at the dog park."
I frowned. "Some sort of protest?"
"No. Dog whistles. I could hear dog whistles."
At that, I sat up a little taller in my seat. An unexpected discovery in the process could create quite the opposite of problems for our funding. "You could hear dog whistles. You're certain?" He nodded, clearly relieved that I was believing him so far. "We can run tests to confirm, but that's fantastic.
Not only has your normal hearing been restored, but your range of frequencies. Yes, he said in a sudden, empathetic whisper. Hearing the dog bark is one thing, but it didn't stop there. All week it got worse.
I got out a pad of paper and pen to take notes. Go on. Encouraged by that, he leaned forward in his chair and gripped the edge of my desk.
I first began to hear them on Monday.
The Monday a few nights ago?
Yes. I don't know what it was, but I chucked it up to my better hearing and tried to ignore it that first night. The longer I lay there in bed, the more the sounds began to come into focus. It was like this muffled, wiggling sound coming from outside, but when I opened the window, I couldn't be sure if it was louder.
I wrote it down, but remained uncertain. It continued to get worse after that. He ran a hand back against his unkempt hair and sighed with relief at finally having his anxieties heard.
Yeah, never during the day, never when there's music playing or people around or the television left on. It's always at night when I'm alone. A feeling comes over me, like my body, telling me I'm in danger for no reason. And then I begin to hear it. It's a rapid back and forth, swishing sound, but dampened somehow, like it's coming from far away. Or at least it's far away until I make a noise.
Until you make a noise? You think these sounds are responding to you somehow?
I know they are,
he insisted quietly.
They're swimming around out there, looking for prey, like any living thing would be. See, that's what I figured out tonight, and that's why I called you. After spending every night, all week, listening to it, I finally got it. I'm hearing swimming sounds. They're all different, too. A pulsing octopus, some fish, maybe. Sharks or other ocean things that I hear when I finally sleep. When I dream, things all screwed up and horrifying with screams and calls that would make you shiver for the rest of your life. I looked a bunch up on Wikipedia, but the sight of them...
As he trailed off into a visible rising anxiety, I stopped writing and held up a hand. Hold on, Anton. Let's just walk it back a step. If you're thinking you're hearing swimming sea life, where's the ocean? He slowly raised his head to look me straight in the eyes. Behind his irises, a dark glare of sprouting madness burned.
All around us, Doc.
I began to reach for my phone, but he drew a long knife from under his shirt and held it forward. Breathing hard, he whisper shouted,
"Don't do it. You hear me out. I'm not crazy. I try to tell my friends. I try to tell my folks. Everyone thinks I'm nuts. Just listen to me."
This was the first time a patient of mine had ever gotten violence, but I knew the procedures. "Okay, Anton. Now listen. You just bring the stress level in here down a bit and lower that knife."
I'm not gonna drop it,"
he told me, his gaze sharp.
"Just listen to me."
"Okay." He waited. I looked down at his knife and up at his face twice.
"Your pen and paper," he said.
"Right." I lifted them carefully, eyeing him for signs of quick movement.
"Here's my reasoning, Doctor,"
he finally continued, returning to calmer and more formal speech.
"I hear things swimming by all the time now. I try to stay where it's loud, the noise wards them off, like animals avoiding a boat. I went to a concert, I left the TV on. You know, that feeling that you get when you're all alone and you just want to run, like something's chasing you out of the dark and you need background noise to feel safer."
I gulped down an unhappy knot. "Yeah."
"It's them," he whispered. "They are out there. But you see, I've got a problem now. That lamp on your desk, it's got batteries, right?"
The small yellow lamp had been a gift.
"Yes." "The rest of the world doesn't have batteries. The power's out in Los Angeles, New York, and here. They're coming for us."
That the power was out, I hadn't even noticed, because he'd shaken his head when I'd tried to turn on the overheads.
"There's no music," he said with rising fear. There's no television to leave on. They're swimming freely all over the cities. They're closer than ever, and I have no way to avoid them.
He turned his head as if listening to some nearby noise.
None of us do. They'll hear us.
Something occurred to me that I figured it might just save my life. Wait, so you hear wiggling sounds when you're alone and it's quiet?
Yeah.
He seemed momentarily hopeful at my question. It's your ears. I laughed. It all made sense. If your hearing's gotten that good, then when there's no other source of sound, you're hearing the microscopic life in your ear canal. He froze, as his anxiety found an avenue for explosive decompression.
Oh.
He stared at me for a moment.
Like, super tiny things?
Yeah, I said, smiling at him as he lowered the knife. Anton, you're going to be fine. We'll figure out a way to dull your hearing a little so you don't have to hear them. Everyone's got tiny little bugs on them, visible only with a microscope. They can't hurt you. But his anxiety didn't fall away completely.
I don't know. It sure sounds like I'm underwater, and things are swimming all around me.
He lifted the knife again. Where would there be an ocean? I asked him. We're in San Francisco. We're not deep underwater in some ocean filled with nightmare things. Come on. Shout. Go on. Take a yell. Kick the false terror to the curb.
I want to. I just...
Do it. Be the good man I know you are. Unsure what to do, he half-smiled, half-frowned, and then gave a weak yell of defiance. Good, I told him. Again. Come on. Yell.
Damn things,
he said, louder. I needed him to see that we were safe.
Yell, Anton. Damn things, you're not real,
he shouted at the top of his lungs. I'm not afraid of... The next part has taken me a couple of days to piece together, memory by memory. There was an explosion of some sort, but lacking fire. The floor and the ceiling seemed to implode into each other, sending wood, brick, and glass shrapnel in every direction. My desk took much of the blast, but obviously, since I'm still in the hospital, I didn't escape unscathed. Anton disappeared in an instant among the debris, but as I stumbled out the destroyed front half of the building, I saw no blood of any kind. He'd been consumed. Staggering to my car in the parking lot, I turned and had one good, solid look at the aftermath. I'd been wrong. He had not been hearing microscopic life in his ear canals. I knew I was wrong because before the rest of the building collapsed from the strain, I saw the shape of the attack that had done it. It was like looking at an apple after a bite. Absolutely and undeniably the result of massive unseen jaws, big enough to take out half of a two-story building in one crunch. He was right. They are out there. And we are pursued by unseen creatures in the night. When you're alone, when it's quiet, and when you get that feeling to run and hide and stay silent, listen to it. Just listen to it. When Christina came back, things were a little strange at first. I wasn't sure what to say to her or how to act around her. It had been so long since I'd even seen her. I'd nearly tripped over her. She was just sitting in the back stoop, her hair hanging over her face, her clothes soaked. It had stopped raining sometime yesterday morning, but she was as wet as if she'd just climbed out of a swimming pool. She was cold, too, icy to the touch. I found her there when I went to take out the trash. She didn't see me at first, and she seemed surprised when I threw my arms around her. Slowly, she reached out and hugged me back, and I knew it would be okay. Brad and Jenna couldn't believe it either. They'd talked to the police, too, all those months, and they'd been told the same thing I had. After this long in a missing person case, Officer Trent had said, tugging at his earlobe, well, it's best not to keep your hopes up. But he'd been wrong. They'd all been wrong. Christina had come back to me. I'd always knew she would. She took some time to get back into the flow of things. She'd been traumatized, you know. She couldn't remember some stuff, like the bed. She wouldn't sleep on the waterbed at all, but just spent hours pressing it and watching the ripples. I opened up a fold-a-bed couch to sleep on, and hamburgers. They threw her for a real loop. She screamed and hid her face when I brought them home. I gave her my fries so she wouldn't be hungry. But I had to eat my burger locked in the bathroom. She sat on the floor outside and sobbed until I finished. Her eyes were different. Brad was the first one to say something, but I'd already noticed. You can't expect someone to go through what she went through without any changes at all. Brad was really intense about it, though. I think he was still a little weirded out. He hadn't quite gotten used to Christina being around again. He pulled me aside one day and whispered to me something about her eyes being wrong. I think he was scared of her overhearing. I told him not to be ridiculous, of course. Even if they weren't the same, I liked the new eyes just fine. The shade was very becoming of her, especially with her skin so pale. I think she'd been out in the sun for a long time. She'd never did get her tan back. She still loved the beach. She didn't spend any time sunbathing like she used to, though. Instead, she was in the water constantly. It used to be all I could do to get her to stand in the surf up to her ankles while I swam, but now she was always pulling me farther and farther out until the lifeguards started blowing their whistles at us. You could feel the cold radiating up from the water, out where she swam now. Once I saw a fin that I swear was a shark. I was happy to have Christina back. I was even happier that we had more in common now. I couldn't understand why Jenna started acting so weirdly. That she and Christina used to be so close. Shopping trips, lunches, vacations to the island. I thought at first maybe she was trying to give Christina some space, but now I think maybe she was just a little jealous. I know it's harsh, but Jenna's never had anything on Christina when it comes to looks. Everyone knows Brad was pissed at me for getting Christina first. He settled for Jenna. Second choice. She knows it, I know it, and Christina knows it. She never made an issue of it, though. Christina was always so kind. Jenna couldn't stand having her rival come back, all new and improved. At any rate, she started avoiding Christina. She stopped coming by to take her out to buy clothes. She stopped calling on the phone. She even came by one day when Christina was out on her own. She did that sometimes, now that she'd come back, and gave me an earful.
It's not Christina, she said. She's not the same.
I told her she was just being as silly as Brad. You can't expect someone to come out of such a harrowing experience exactly the same as she went in. Now that would be crazy. Jenna must have gotten Brad on her side, probably played on that eye-shape thing that bothered him so much. Or maybe he was jealous too. I told you how he'd always wanted Christina. Where was she all those months, they'd say. What was it that really happened to her? I told them we'd find out when Christina was ready to tell us, but they had to push it. You can't blame Christina for what happened. She'd been through a lot. I told them how happy we were together. I didn't tell them everything, of course. I didn't think they'd understand about all the differences of new Christina. Besides, some things are private. I tried to keep them from poking around and upsetting her, but they did it anyway. I wish they hadn't. I wish I'd been there. I could have stopped them. I could have saved Christina. Brad is the one who did it. He managed to pull the trigger of that shotgun after she bit out his throat. He'd noticed her new allergy, too, and he'd loaded the gun with some custom shells. He was always a big firearms geek. He had a huge collection of guns and ammo. Jenna. I think Jenna must have gone in first, because there was less of her left. She didn't even have a weapon. Maybe she tried to talk. That wasn't smart. I hid the bodies, or at least the parts Christina hadn't eaten before she died of her wounds. Christina had made the perfect place for it. I tucked them all into the concealed closet, down in the nursery. The crib was still in there from before Christina had disappeared. We'd been so happy, knowing our child was on the way. We still were, of course, though it was children, plural, now. I liked to go in there at night and watch all the little bodies in their translucent sacks, glued to the wall and to each other with Christina's secretions. They're starting to move now, and you can see the tiny, needle-like teeth. I wonder what they'll be like, our children. I know you'll be proud of them, Christina. They'll be proud of you, too. I can't wait for them to be born. I want to tell you a story. The old goblin in the wicker hat wiggled his saggy bottom on the log. A generation of storytelling had made a permanent groove in the wood, the smooth surface now hugging his rear like a lover's hand. His long hooked nose hung impossibly low over a wispy white mustache, the latter joining an equally wispy beard that rolls over and around his belly and ended by his arthritic knees. The assembled tribe had been waiting for the moment in anticipation. Gregor's tales spanned throughout his long life and then some more. No one in the tribe knew how old he actually was, but the wrinkles on his face and around his eyes suggested a very long time. But his eyes still suggested a wickedly clever mind. Gregor leaned forward. The light from the small fire crackling before them seemed to dim in anticipation, too. Once, before you and even before me, before the veil had formed and magic was young, before we knew how to dance with the ebb and flow and before the shades were made, a little green blob in dirty blue denim dungarees shifted on his mother's lap as she gawked at the old-timer. She pulled at a rug brown blanket covering her small change. She pulled at a rough brown blanket covering her small charge and hugged him tighter. Gregor pulled a small log from his side and tossed it to the red embers of the fire. A tiny shower of sparkles rose into the night air and drifted away. There was only one that walked among us that could fight off the demons from the toplands. Only one of us that was brave enough to try. I was very young back then, but I still remember. He tapped his temple with his crooked finger and glanced around the crowd, the light from the fire dancing over the green skin of his face. Without him, we would have been lost. But this isn't the story of Tenor the Brave. No, this is the story of the one who gave us the veil. The barrier that stopped the world out there from finding us. Gregor's forked tongue flicked out and snagged a wayward fly. He munched on it as he spoke. He came to us on a night much like this, only before we were forced to live below the earth, back when we tilled the land and farmed the flops. He pointed with his walking stick up to a rocky ledge that opened up to a dull, starless sky. A slither of a pinkish moon peeked out from behind a dark cloud. Black clouds blotted out that sky, too. A mist rolled out from the trees and engulfed our small village. My father's mill was first. A chill pulled at our limbs, making them heavy and sluggish like the earth didn't want to let us go. But then he came out of the mist. A giant with the gray clouds swirled around his cloak like wicked fiends. He wore a brown robe the color of a tree trunk and just as rough. Our kind had never seen his like. Sure, we had seen some strange things roaming the wastelands, but never one like this, and never this close to our village. The old goblin waved his stick in the air above the fire. A blue nimbus slowly formed the shape of a long and thin person wrapped in brown cloth from beak to chin. Angular features adorned his face, but where hair was normally met was a large set of antlers. The elders hurried us to a cave, fearing for our safety. Tenor the Brave and his mighty hammer was the only one with the courage to face him. Deep inside that wet cave we waited for what seemed like an age, waited for this demon to come and slaughter us. The small goblin stuck a thumb in his mouth and ducked his head under his mother's flabby arm. A stalk of red hair and small blue eyes looked out worriedly from the flappy skin of her underarm. Tenor came to the cave with his person, and we knew him for what he was, an elf and a friend. He had come to help us, for we knew not what was coming behind the mist. An unspeakable terror. Never before had our land seen such horror. They left only death and destruction in their wake, taking what they wanted and killing what they didn't. If not for Terran the elf, I would not be here to tell this tale. He showed the elders the Everflow and explained how to use it. but it was as strange to use as the terror coming to our doors. But he raised a knobbly finger in the air and flicked his stick at the fire. The nimbus rotated and flattened out to show a scene of farmland with tilted land and a windmill at its center. Rolling hills cascaded away to a tightly packed forest. No one knew the land better than us, for we were farmers and shepherds back then, and the land was ours. We had found a way to fight these beings, and we had gained some hope. It was precious and little, but it was hope. The crowd hung on his every word as the world around them stopped, as if to listen to the tale itself. Even the fluorescent blue flubs had stopped their sluggish movements and pulsed softly above their heads. The worm-like creature slowly chomped at the lichen of the cave roof. We dug our beloved soil deeper than ever before, dug until our hands bled and the ground yearned below us into blackness. We pulled at the trees that had given us fire and warmth, pulled at them and made long sticks with sharp points and stuck them to the ground. All the while, the elf Terran stood at the edge of this cave mouth and spoke to the Everflow. The old goblin's eyes started to fade and his expression became distant. He stood like a god to us then, glowing with lights and colors I had never seen. Even the oldest among us at this time had never seen anything like it before. Gregor flicked his stick at the nimbus again, and it slowly changed to show the elf shining with radiant colors. A whirling matrix of reds, purples, silver, and gold circled him in a tempest of a storm. The magic flowed around and through this body. But he was too late, for they came with spears and swords, hammers and clubs. They came with fire and death, teeth and horns. They were mountainous, like the elf. Taller than three of us stood on top of one another. Faces of white and red, hair of black and brown, yellow and red. Gregor raised his hands high as the small group huddled close together as the fire spat and crackled. Silence regained as Gregor showered his tone. We stood ready as ever as we could, mere children in the face of such horrors. The sounds of their war cries still haunt me today. Like thunder and blood they came, and Terran stood unmoving to our plight, like the statues we carved from the rocks, unobtainable, lost to the Everflow. Tenno the Mighty led us courage in the face of that death, with his mighty hammer, and watched unflinching as they came running for the cave. When they reached our trenches and pikes, we thought, nay, we hoped, that it would be enough to slow or stop them, but it was like a toy to a child. They jumped over our trenches as easily as we would a crack in the rock. A little girl goblin jumped out of her seat and ran behind her father, as Gregor jumped to his feet to enact the scene he told. He pulled his stick through his hand as if it gave him some resistance. They pulled our pikes and turned them against us, throwing them like spears. Never had we felt such fear. Our hope had been squashed as quick as a beetle scurrying under a rock. But still, Tenno stood with his mighty hammer in his hand, ready for the first to fall under its weight. Gregor flicked his stick at the blue nimbus, and the scene changed to one with a lone figure silhouetted on a rocky precipice. A huge, bulging arm held a heavy hammer that shone with a faint light. Crude marking etched in the handle shone faintly. Long hair trailed out to the side of his shoulder like a waterfall of dark liquid. My father was a brave man indeed. Me, well, not so much. I was only a babe then, no bigger than you, my dear. He pointed to the hiding child as she peered around her father's rounded shoulder. The curiosity in her eyes shined feverishly as Gregor grinned at her. The first one of these men stepped foot on the rocks below and up as they searched. Blood-curdling screams and shouts preceded them like the howls of the deepest holes. But still, he stood defiant against such odds. A trickle of blue bioluminescent slime dripped to the floor by the fire, and the crowd looked up to the congregation of flub above them, their blue light casting an eerie glow on the storytelling. Tenno raised his hammer for the first strike, and down it came with a crushing blow. We saw then that these creatures could be hurt, and if they could be hurt, they could be killed. We raised our forks and our pikes, and we joined the fray. A few gasps rang out in the cave as Gregor thrust his stick out again and again in mock battle. They came with steel, they came with claws and teeth, but we did not yield. Time stopped still in the heat of battle, Swords flashed, blood ran, death rejoiced. And then, they stopped, just as suddenly as they came. Gregor splayed his long bony finger in the air as his bushy eyebrows rose high. His wide eyes searched each face, drawing them in even further. Somehow they couldn't see us anymore. They looked about like a nugget trying to find its lost gold. But still, we stood before them. It was then that Terran the Elf was at our side. He had given us the veil, and no longer could these men find us. The old goblin sank back in his seat, breathing heavily. He wriggled his saggy bottom until he was comfortable again and turned towards the fire. The little girl had crept out from behind her father and was hugging him instead. The small blob had fallen asleep under his mother's arm and snored peacefully, unaware of the history being foretold. Terran stayed with us for a long time. He helped us create Nextus, our home, and he taught a few of us secrets of the Everflow and how its magic could keep the veil intact so we never had to fear man again. The old goblin rested his shaggy chin on the handle of his stick and watched the small fire dancing before him, lost to the memory of what once was. "I wonder if my old friend is still out there," he mused. "I hope he is, because with him up there, I know we are safe down here. However, I have one of their devices and sent out our tales so they know not to come, so they know they will never find us." Gregor smiled a sad smile and looked up to the rocky outcrop and the night beyond. The congregation followed his stare, knowing that the tale was at an end. The sounds of satisfaction expelled their lungs as the clouds cleared, revealing the shimmering barrier known as the Veil.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.